Good morning. My name is Natasha Rockman. I'm the parliamentary liaison and the media liaison office for the Deputy Minister of Tourism. Morning, everyone. I'm Sharma Nashu. I'm the parliamentary liaison officer in the Minister's office.
Good morning, everybody. I'm the parliamentary liaison officer for the Director General of the Liaison.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Felice Sino. I'm the CEO of the Tourism Enterprise Partnership.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Lisa Hocking. I'm the General Manager of Operations for TEP.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Johan Peterson. I'm a wine leader of Masuba Wines.
Good morning, everyone. It's Ismail Hussain from the Parliamentary Managing Group.
Thank you very much. Some of our members are not here. Honorable Makhele lost her daughter and she is not around. Honorable Makubela Madel has been ill. She had an operation. She's lost her brother. Honorable Megwa has had an operation in Iran City. He is not here today. Thank you very much. Can I hand over to you, TP? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues from the department, thank you very much for inviting us to address you today. This is a follow-up to the visit that you had with the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, of which TEP is a member. We did have time to engage with the members who were present on that particular day, and you promised that you're going to follow up and invite us to come meet the entire committee in Parliament, and we are so happy that you followed through on your promise, and here we are today. We have put together a presentation which we hope at the end of the proceedings will give members of the committee a very good understanding of who the TEP are, what we do, and basically how we play a role in the tourism sector, particularly when it comes to tourism SMEs. On the agenda, it's indicated that Mr. Brian Whittaker, the chairperson of the TEP, was going to be here, but Brian has indeed sent in his apologies, and I'm sorry that that apology perhaps would not have not reached Parliament in time, but Brian is not going to be with us today. So it will just be myself and Lisa Hopkins, who is, as she has already introduced herself, the chair, the general manager of the operation. Okay, then let's go on to with the presentation. It's quite extensive. We have prepared about 30 slides, and we hope to get you through these slides. And the phrase that we use to essentially describe ourselves is successfully developing entrepreneurs for over a decade. This is true to our history. We have been around for the last 15 years, but you'll get to hear more about that a little bit later in the presentation. Okay. We always start our presentations by also giving you a snapshot of what it is that we do. The people that we support, small entrepreneurs that we support. We have basically taken a selection of our enterprises to give you an indication of who they are, what they look like, what they do, and so on and so forth. And we support entrepreneurs who have created jobs for as little as 2 people, to entrepreneurs who have created jobs for as many as 73 people. For instance, look at the last row at the bottom on the right hand side. Elias Travel, who has been one of the attendants for some time and who has a true operating company, has created jobs for 73 people. If you have your eyes a little bit further up, the first row, the second lady from the right, UCC Design, Stella Futurist, who has created companies for 65 people, for instance. And this is really just to give you a snapshot and put faces to the enterprises that we support and the kind of jobs they've been creating. And this is the beneficiaries of what our entrepreneurs do, the jobs that they have created, and this is just like give you an indication of the kind of people employed by our enterprises. Our job is to accelerate growth and transformation of the economy by creating decent work. We have a national footprint, meaning that we are present throughout South Africa. We are led by a board of directors, organized in a committee, a finance audit and risk committee, a social and ethics committee, a remuneration committee, and a nominations committee. Then, TEP is led by a chief executive, who is assisted by 2 managers, a general manager in charge of operations, and this is that person here present, and we have a manager for finance administration, and they have other people, other managers basically working under them to make sure that we deliver on our mission. We have offices in Eastern Cape, Gauteng, and Northwest. This is the same office that they have branches in all these provinces that they take care of. Food State and Northern Cape are managed by a single office with operations in Bloemfontein and as well as in Northern Cape. We have an office in KwaZulu-Natal that takes care of just that province because it's a big province. Limpopo and Mpumalanga have been put together and they are managed by a single branch manager, and the Western Cape has its own office here. In terms of our board of directors, just to give you an indication of who they are, Mr. Brian Richardson is very well known in business circles. He was the chief executive officer of the Business Trust, and the Business Trust is the forefather of the Tourism Enterprise Partnership. We'll get to that. We have Doris Morote, who's the managing director of Mamba Safaris. The history, what is interesting about Burnett is that Burnett is a beneficiary, or was a beneficiary of CET. And sometimes we'll be asked, okay, of the work that you've been doing over the last 16 years, who are the entrepreneurs that you can point to as proof of success that you guys have been achieving? Burnett is that example. His company, Monster Safari, is based in Northwest at Sun City. And that company is so successful that Burnett has now actually bought into it. And they have amalgamated into one of the two of the operations called Game Tractors. So that company has now become Monster Game Tractors Safari. And that's really a great example of how you mobilize public and private resources for them to produce. So Bernard is that example. He's so successful that now he's put on TEP board, and it's for him a way of giving back. He's given, he knows exactly what small enterprises are going through, and he will be able to provide advice to the management team as we carry our work forward. Mr. Clifford Ross is the chief executive officer of City Lodge, which is the most successful pure hotel business in this country. Stocked by JSC listed, about a week ago, they released their annual results, spectacular results, which gives an indication of the dynamics in the tourism economy. Ishumelen is with the Mother Builders Association of South Africa. She was very involved in 2010, and as you will know, small businesses really actively involved in providing accommodation in 2010, and this was actually the first time that FIFA was allowing non-practicing hotels to provide accommodation to FIFA participants, whether that's players or just spectators. Johan Ostaden, previously from CWG, is a board member, and he heads up our project committee. On the bottom row, Katinka is a very well-known personality. She is with the IBC, which is a senior executive, and she has been leading the tourism and services track on the IBC. Linda Sevilla is a CA, certified accountant, independent director. Then we have Mr. Morongwe Pantela, who is none other than the GDG for tourism in the National Department of Tourism. Obviously, Mr. Manel, Rick Manel, who is with the Tri-Swiss Bank, very senior manager, well-known in business circles. And together with Brian, which is the current chairman, Rick used to be the chairman of TEC, and when he stepped down, Brian became the chairman. And together, they actually drove the business trust initiative back in 2000. And really, if there are two individuals in this whole country who know the history of tech and tech contribution to SMEs, I think it would be those two gentlemen. The next slide is just to give you an indication of the management team in the office. The two of us form the EXCO in the office, and these are the various tech managers and staff members. As you can see, it's getting in majority by women. and sometimes the joke in the office is that I think we are about four in the office. But you boys, you can pay for this, you know, we'll take care of you. But I don't think that will carry out something. An overview of tech. Now that we have basically given you an indication of our structure, our governance systems, and so on and so forth, let's get into perhaps an overview of tech as an organization. Tech is a non-for-profit company. It is a flagship public-private partnership, and it is one of the longest-standing and most successful enterprise development partners for small businesses in South Africa. Our mandate, as explained, as decided back in 2000, is to facilitate the growth, development, and sustainability of small tourism businesses. We offer a number of interventions that provide hands-on, step-by-step support and guidance to small tourism businesses. We have, like any organization, a vision and mission and plan that drives our work. Some of our notable achievements, essentially that we have developed an enterprise and supply development program, used to be called EDP, Enterprise Development Portfolio, but with the new code, we have renamed it ESES, Enterprise and Supply Development Solution, which basically increases private sector contribution while also facilitating the integration of SMEs into large corporate value chains. We have a well-established practice of cost-sharing partnerships with provincial tourism authorities and departments for greater economic impact. We also run third-party projects in terms of, for instance, linking up with an organization like CAPSITA to run learnership programs for them. We are currently running one such program with 260. Learners having been through program. We contribute to the work of a fair trade in tourism in trying to push the agenda of our responsible tourism, and we are basically trying to get as many of our members as possible certified through the fair trade certification program. We also, because we have come to realize that one of the most difficult issues faced by tourism for businesses is the issue of access to finance. We have decided that we were going to take that challenge on, and we went into a partnership with CIFA, Small Enterprise Finance Agency, which is a division of the IDB, to create a facility that basically provides loans specifically to tourism, to CAP members. So a condition of accessing that loan is for you to be an a CAP member. And loans will range anywhere from 10,000 rand all the way to 5 million rand. And the repayment period will range from 3 months to 5 years. And the principle is really straightforward. The lower the amount that you borrow, the shorter the repayment period, the higher the amount, the longer the payment period. Another aspect of equity, essentially, is that it is 2% below the commercial rate applied by Commercial Bank. And this is a great addition to what we have been doing, and the applications are coming in and are being processed. The only problem is that fund is a very small one. It's only 50 million rand, and it's very easy to complete a fund like that. But it is a revolving fund, so as people who have their loans, we create other loans to give up. We also have now, as of a month ago, we have received notification from the services visa that CAP has not been accredited as an agency that can deliver accredited training, and the accreditation is basically the new sense of creation. This allows us to provide training to entities that are in the services sector in general, and obviously we're very happy with that. Now, to give you an indication of our offering, we have been working with small entities for the last 15 years, as I've indicated, and we have basically used that knowledge to categorize the kind of assistance that small businesses need, and they will fit into the five categories that you see on the slide there. The first pillar is really access to information. Sometimes that's all you need, as I mentioned earlier. Accessing information that will help you grow your business. We have an information portal that we call Wiki Tourism that is basically playing that particular role. If you need any tourism-related information, the hope is that you go to Wiki Tourism, we will be able to find that information. We also carry out research and development, research to advise or to guide us in terms of the program, the support program that we make available to SMEs, and that is basically under the pillar of access to information. And then the next pillar is business support. Under this pillar, we register businesses and we basically identify the kind of support that they need. And the instrument that we do use for that particular pillar is what we call D&A, Development Needs Assessment. These are robust tests that we put small enterprises through to really discover where they stand on the enterprise growth model. And without wanting to go into the details, we basically use this model. Once we identify where they are, we then customize our intervention to fit them. So if somebody, for instance, is not ready for mentorship, we are not going to spend 40,000 rand for the 6 months to on the enterprise, simply because we know through our test that this particular enterprise is not ready for mentorship yet. So that's how we utilize the DNA to really target our intervention to the right level. The next slide is access to finance, and access to finance has two blocks. The BDF, Business Development Fund, which is a grant facility available at PEC to assist small enterprises with the small items. So if you are a guest house and you want to update your website, and you went to your neighborhood IT guy, they said it cost you 10,000 to update your website, you can apply to CAP, you can give you up to 50% of that cost, 5,000 for you to upgrade your website. That would be a grant funding. We're not going to ask you to repay it. But, like I've already indicated, serious entrepreneurs need more than grants to grow their businesses. They actually need proper access to funding. And the issue that we have been trying to address by going into a partnership with CIFA to create equity. I've already spoken about equity previously, so I'm not going to spend any more time on it. The fourth pillar is our skills development pillar. And the first one, we basically need to take it from the bottom to bottom up learnership, as I've already indicated, that we carry out in collaboration with Capacita for instance, and then training workshop. We have 1 day training workshop as well as 2 day training workshop. And these training workshops are essentially to address the skills that entrepreneurs need in order to grow their businesses. So it could be anywhere from a training workshop on market, a training workshop on financial management, a training workshop on attending acquisitions, and so forth. And then the higher level interventions are basically the mentorship programs. Every entrepreneur would love to get into a mentorship program. However, mentorship programs are very very expensive to run, and certainly an NGO such as the TEP does not have the means to meet the demand. So we try our best to make sure that the people that do get into the mentorship program are entrepreneurs who deserve to be in it, and that they are serious about their businesses, and through the mentorship program they will grow to become the earnest neurosis of Mahmoud Safari of next year, or Mohammed Baba of English Travel that we have referred to in that slide showing some of the entrepreneurs that we support. And then the last slide, ladies and gentlemen, is basically our access to market pillar. And access to market is also something that we have decided to engage in over the last four or five years, simply because we have realized that you can train an entrepreneur until he or she turns blue in the face. That training will give him or her skills, but sometimes the business needs more than skills to survive. The business actually needs access to market. The business needs to sell goods or service. As simple as that. If you are not doing enough selling, you are going to survive in one way. So what we have decided to do with market access is to actually facilitate market linkages. So we would identify a tour operator who is interested in working with a small wheels operator, somebody with just a couple of buses. We help them to create a partnership, and this wheels operator now becomes part and parcel of the catalog of tour operator. And the way we do it sometimes is not really that one-on-one. The way we do it is that we target specific shows, specific exhibitions. The Indaba comes to mind because we all know what the Indaba is. We will identify 20 entrepreneurs who are ready for the big stage. We take them in there, we put them on the stage, and together with our partners at African Tourism, we will facilitate for the buyers of African Tourism in there to also look at those SMEs and in what ways they can work together. Through this process, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. Simply because small enterprises suffer the issue of how long are they going to be around? Can they deliver the quality and the consistency at the level that my clients would expect? And those are some of the challenges that we try to address by access to market, but particularly through a brand that we have created. Signify to the market that if a small enterprise is a member of what we call South African Treasure, then that member is ready in all aspects. If they are ready to deliver the quality, the quantity, as well as the consistency that you would be looking for as a tourism buyer or as a tourism customer for that matter. Ladies and gentlemen, this slide basically summarizes what it is, how we go about assisting small enterprises in the tourism sector. Now, what has our impact been since inception in 2000? And the figures that we are sharing with you here are audited figures as at 31 December 2014. They're audited and are up to date. On the investment front, we have basically invested more than half a billion rand in the tourism SME development since 2000. Okay? 550 million rand to be exact. We have contributed to the generation of over 7 billion rand. We have supported the creation of over 80,000 jobs. We have trained 25,000 SME operators under employees, and 450 entrepreneurs have been mentored through the TEP mentorship program. And we have a current client database of 3,000 SMEs spread across all sectors of the tourism industry. Now, let me pause here to explain how we arrive at these numbers, particularly the 7 billion and 80,000 jobs. We benchmark enterprises from the day they enter the city, from the day they register to become a tech member. And we benchmark them on two levels. The number of jobs that they have on the day they joined tech, and the turnover that they were making on the day they joined tech. And every month they are required to report back to tech on those numbers. How many jobs have you created since joining? How much turnover have you generated since joining? And we take the difference. We take the incremental difference between the number of jobs they had on joining and the turnover they were enjoying on joining. And we consider the difference as the impact that training or support has basically been able to create. Now, we do it every month simply because we want to track them. We know that it takes a little longer than a month to create jobs or to generate incremental income. And we are also able to identify exactly what is the time frame for our intervention to have an impact. And in marketing, for instance, it's very clear. If you have basically assisted them with a marketing intervention, you can expect to see some impact 6 months down the line. Sometimes a little bit longer. You assist them to an ITV show in Berlin or WTM show in London. They come back. They have contacts that they have established with the operators. It will take maybe a year for you to see that impact, for them to be actually now featured in the catalogs or in the brochures of those operators. But at any rate, we do have a robust way of monitoring the impact that our interventions are having. Job creation fund, as well as on the turnover generation fund. Now, the graphic segmentation of our interventions. This slide gives you an indication of the 4,100 establishments that are in our data. The 3,000, over 3,000, are people who have accessed support in the last 12 to 18 months. There are people who have been in the database much longer than that. If you add everybody, you can get to that 4,100. If you need to go all the way back to 2000 when the company was established, it would be much longer, much higher than about 7,000. That people sometimes get out of the tourism business. So there's an element of mortality that's or attrition that you need to take into consideration. At any rate, the current 4,100 that we have, if you're looking to segment them in terms of how many of them are rural, 58% of those are found in rural areas, or 2,365 of them to be exact. In terms of historically disadvantaged enterprises, we have 2,789 of them, or 68% of our database. Youth-owned enterprises and youth in the South African type, in South African definition of it, any person who is 36 years, 35 or younger. Youth-owned enterprises, 550. Women-owned enterprises, 1,910. And in terms of micro, small, and medium, you can see that 43 of them are micro enterprises. 55 of them are small enterprises, and about 3 of them are medium enterprises. And this really, ladies and gentlemen, supports the point of view that the tourism sector is primarily a micro to small enterprise sector. The medium, and the medium, as we know, the definition of medium enterprise is only 3% of those. So the question really, or the challenge, is how do you come up with a robust support groups and that will get people to move along these definitions, going from the micro to the small to the medium, and after medium obviously is large. So how do we make the next tour, the next city lodge out of the small enterprise? That is a challenge. Job creation in the charitable group would happen as a consequence of what we are doing to move them along. Now, achievements, just to give you a snapshot of 1 year of activity, for instance, the immediate past year of the year 2013-2014, in terms of SMEs registered and paid, we recorded 920 of those. Now, it is an achievement of 186%, simply because when we budgeted or when we targeted for that past year, we were targeting 500 SMEs actually registered and paid the registration fee of about 450 rand. We were very surprised that we almost doubled what it is that we're actually looking for. In terms of enterprises assessed from a DNA point of view, we budgeted for 179 and we achieved 179. Funding contracts in terms of BDF, how many enterprises have applied to our grant program, about 633 grants we dished out. That is also an achievement of 100%. And some of the enterprises would enjoy two grants, some only one. We have a way of controlling that as well. And the argument goes, in terms of job creation, we targeted for the enterprises that we support to create 4,000 jobs. And they created 4,040 jobs, 101 achievements. In terms of turnover, we have basically achieved 850 billion as incremental turnover by the enterprises that we support, by those 920 enterprises. So this is just to give you a snapshot of our target delivery. Now, businesses, business registration and DNA, so if we were to now take that part of the year and just break it down in terms of the areas that we talked about. In terms of business registration and support, 920 business registration and pay were achieved. And the slide essentially repeats the previous one. What you need to have to take into consideration is the prep according to policies. Financial year 2013-2014. As you can see, headed end at 156. Can basically make grand recommender. Sorry, yeah, it's okay. Headed end in blue, 124. The smallest one is essentially the largest province as well, at 35. There are reasons for that. Not a lot of businesses in Northern Cape, but also distances, large distances.
Also, the cost of operating a
Sure. Now, just after to finance, just to show you an indication of, in terms of the brands, the thing that the city has provided, how it is, where people are applying the grant plan to travel and accommodation, to attend the show, to grow their businesses, for instance. They want to apply to our video system to carry out advertising. 9% have applied to support the growth of their passion, marketing, membership in other organizations. So if you want to become an app member, for instance, or member of the Cape Town Chamber of Commerce, you can apply to the TED, and we will basically give you a grant to pay for your membership in the organization. Exhibition, if you want to go to the Gateway Show or any other show to market your establishment, you can apply to us. And there's a tax center for us, like a workplace to have a business card. Equally, I think with your permission, I would skip this slide because we have actually said everything that we needed to say to have separately, but again, if I would the equity slide we have talked about how it came out. But it's access to finance has been the missing link in our work, and it's, we have been looking for ways of addressing it. And the opportunity of addressing it came with the establishment of IFA, Non-Enterprise Finance Agency, which is the invention of IFA and all these agencies. And when it came about, they also changed their strategy. They instead of actually working one-on-one with the entrepreneurs, we can do that. We can also look at aggregators, such as the CDD, who have access to large databases of enterprises and support them with their and use them as a channel to get to the actual entrepreneur. And that's really how equity came about. Okay. We've explained that it is a 50 million developing facility. That's the loan would range from 10,000 to 5 million. The repayment term is from 3 months to 5 years. The interest rate, apparent commercial rate, range anywhere from 10.6% to 12.6%. And it is substantially lower, in fact, a good 2% than 10%. And people can, enterprises can apply to equity for bridge financing, capital equipment financing, and business expansion finance. And we perform the technical conditions on applications. These are our entrepreneurs who know that we know what they can achieve, we know what they cannot achieve. Therefore, we can manage their expectations. And then the CEO will basically do the credit financing component of application. So that's how the relationship has been working. In terms of skills development,
I think Philippa has actually covered a lot of skills development in our model slide. The mentorship program is generally the most popular program because it's one-on-one attention for each individual. It's fixed with the, an industry expert. It's 6 months of mentorship, and each product gets an individual growth plan that will essentially guide their business for the next 2 years. There has been a demand for a longer mentorship program from 8 to 12 months. A separate portion of our mentorship program is a partnership that we have with PUM in the Netherlands, where they send their retired experts to South Africa for a period of 2 weeks. And those retired tourism experts essentially live with our tourism small business products for a period of 2 weeks, and they get to experience how they run their businesses. Based on that experience, they give them advice on how they should be conducting business. And that's been very successful. We've had a partnership with the Netherlands for about 3 years now. Our training workshop, we have about 11 one-day toolkits. We then have four two-day workshops as well. And then we have our accredited training as well. We try and make the training as relevant as possible to our tourism products. It is based on the development needs assessment completed for each tourism business. And we also do very relevant training that's relevant to government at the moment, such as SARS training. Our products are very afraid to
find out information from SARS because they're afraid of what they need to reveal. So it is a SARS training. It's run by a SARS facilitator. We do labor relations training as well. It's all very relevant at the moment. We do landscaping, we do baking, all sorts of different types of training that's relevant to the business. And then, as Lego mentioned, we've implemented 263 learnerships for CASITA, and that's learnerships in management. And then we are accredited to do learnerships in new venture creation, entry level 3 and level 4. They don't have to complete the entire learnership. They can do 1 or 2 or 3 days of training, and they then get credits towards a full qualification.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. So we let's move to access to market, for instance. We basically participate. We are a sponsor up until last year of IKEA, the Emerging Tourism Entrepreneur of the Year Award. We helped South African tourism basically run the process in terms of identifying, selecting, and shortlisting enterprises. We are in a partnership with the Rennes Red Stamp Club, Rennes Travel, one of the largest travel organizations in this country. They are a partner of TEF because they invest their enterprise and class development fund into TEF. And we basically send some of our members to become Rennes Red Stamp Club members. It's a prestige club that's the generates a lot of business for families, but they also take advantage of that process. We help with advertising and public relations in terms of market access, and we participate in events and exhibitions, and we have a list of them. Indaba, Getaway Show, WTM in London, WTM in Brazil, the show in the Netherlands, ITV in Berlin, New York Travel and Tourism Fair, as well as the Miami World Show. So when I say we participate, I'm not talking now about as an organization, I'm talking about our enterprises. We apply to them for participation at those shows, and they report back to us in terms of what business they have generated for themselves. As an organization ourselves, the only show that we participate in is actually in now. And this year, we decided to also give WTM Africa, Cape Town, is a try, so we'll be back in the city in April to see how it goes. We also participate in the Gateway Show, which is a consumer show held in Johor and in Cape Town. We do participate in it. So wherever we participate in the show, the label that we market is actually the essence of the friendship, because it's an actual product. And people will not be attending these shows even for corporate entities such as our office in Silver, but they're actually looking for products that they can buy. So when you go there, we promote ethics and treasure, and generally it's a good for them. We have talked about weak tourism, the tools that we use to address the need for information in tourism sector. I've participated based on the weekly context, and that information is co-generated. Okay, really much. I think members of the portfolio committee will be interested in this presentation as well, in the sense that we are calling this a comparative assessment, in the sense that sometimes it's very easy for you to basically sit there and think that you're doing a great job, that everything is hunky-dory. We actually commissioned a research study to investigate what impact you are having out there on the tourism sector. And we did a 3-year longitudinal study with a research house called the Small Business Project, SBP. They are an independent organization that do a lot of market research for large corporates, and we actually asked them to go out there and look at tech and the work that you have been doing over the last 15 years, well, over the last 12 started. The first report was generated in 2011, 2012, and 2013. And what they did as a longitudinal study, they needed to track the same sample over the year. So they identified about 132 SMEs selected from using a particular criteria, selected from various areas of the country, and then they track them over 3 years. So what you are looking at here essentially is some of the results in terms of impact of test services according to our SMEs. What are the most impactful services that have offered? And what you are looking at here, training by and large has been identified as the most impactful program. Marketing and market access support, obviously, if I run both operations, like one of us, one of our supervisors does in Cape Town and have paid for you to go to the Miami Boat Show, and as a result, if you get so much business coming your way, you would find that our marketing and market access support would have an impact on your operation. That's really good, what you've seen. And funds, obviously, have also been found to be impactful. Then mentorship. And mentorship, when you take mentorship and compare it to the others, it is small. But it's small simply because not a lot of our members have been exposed to it. It's very expensive to run. And here, I must perhaps just indicate that from a tech point of view, we're very happy to hear during the budget speech that the Department of Small Enterprises would be given 3 million, and some of the areas that were mentioned for support is training and mentorship. And it does those two areas that work. We have evidence to prove that it works. Therefore, if more emphasis would be put on it, then that work needs to be done. Now, we also try to find out from our members barriers to employment creation. You are an entrepreneur, you are running a small business. What are some of the bottlenecks that you have been faced with? You can see the regulatory environment, including labor laws, has been identified as one of the greatest barriers to employment creation. People are hesitant to employ. In the tourism sector. And for us, this is a contradiction in terms. We have been pushing this idea of job creation. We have been supporting our entrepreneurs for them to grow their businesses so they can create jobs and employ people. We surveyed a sample of them to say, okay, in your view, what are the issues? Why are we not creating more jobs? Very simple, in their minds. Given the current regulatory environment, including the labor laws, I just cannot hire because I don't know what impact that is going to have on my business, or if it does not pan out, I'm now stuck with someone that I just get rid of, and yet my business is suffering simply because the person is not delivering. We have flagged this to basically our partners, but I think for you would be the most appropriate audience to share this kind of information with. The next bit is lack of skills. It is true that sometimes when you want to grow your business, you will need skills that are not readily available to you, simply because perhaps our industry is not the most competitive industry. If you're looking for a finance manager and you are a true operator, are you really going to afford to pay that finance manager the same amount that the bank would be able to pay them for it? There is something that we need to talk about. It is an impediment to growing tourism companies, but it is it's a competitive issue. It's a market dynamic issue. I don't think that anyone can do much about it, but it is there for all of us to have a look. The seasonal nature of work has also been identified as an impediment to job creation. Now, it is true that tourism work is some confusion. I cannot afford to keep my guest house open throughout the year, simply because 6 months of the year we have guests, we have visitors, but the rest of the year, unless I'm just really taking that guest house for sure, from a business point of view, it doesn't make sense. Therefore, I will put the 6 months, everyone should go home and go get jobs elsewhere, and when the tourism season is back, we open. There are tourism businesses that operate from that perspective. I think it is something that we need to share with you as well. And lastly, staff turnover have been identified as an impediment of creation for job consolidation, simply because the tourism industry has an entry-level sector where people come in, acquire customer service skills, become actually very service-oriented, but sometimes they're just hiding their time. Should a better opportunity come from a different sector, they will go. And banks are known to recruit from the tourism sector. Because they know that the tourism, people who work in the tourism sector have client sources, their clients are facing, they are client oriented. So if you recruit someone from that sector, chances are they'll be a very good job providing customer service to your to your client. For us, this excerpt from the research summarizes what we have been able to achieve from a third party point of view, from an outside person looking in. The pictures emerge from the 2013 SME Growth Index, and that's the name of the project, and of the two rounds before it, is of a confident, ambitious panel leveraging tech support to drive business growth. So this is essentially what they are finding out from the 130 businesses that they tracked over time. The strong consensus on client firms is that tech provides value for its clients. In broad terms, tech clients are satisfied with the support they receive from tech and regard this as making important contributions to the success. And for us, that's really all there is to it. This is what we have been mandated to facilitate. And from an external independent research point of view, we have been able to achieve that. Now, fundraising and partnership. Throughout this morning, ladies and gentlemen, the issue of how is that funded hasn't really been explained explicitly. As a Section 21 company, the private sector partnership, we get our funding from the National Department of Tourism, 50% of our funding, and the 50% we need to raise. Now, our 50% traditionally has come from the business trust, which closed down in September 2019. They left us legacy funds, which obviously we have been using over the years, over the last 5 years, to match whatever funding we get from the National Department of Tourism. But we also implement enterprise and supply development initiatives for corporate looking to comply, corporate looking to invest in small enterprises and get their points for EV. We have been able to source funding from those, and using those three sources, that's how we have been able to basically fund our operation. On the private sector side, you can see Rallies, you can see Springbok, you can see people, you can see Credit Suisse, Google, and Business Trust, and the like. On the public sector side, we have National Department of Tourism, as well as the Provincial Tourism Authority. That's why you have Housing Tourism Authority there, the Eastern Cape Development Corporation, let's say Malanga, and Northern Cape. The idea for us to continue sustaining our open session is to make sure that we maintain this relationship, but also that we basically get more corporate sector partners to come on board. And we are working on that. Now, This leads nicely into the next slide, which talks about the entity-type partnership. As a reminder, CAP was established and funded the business trust from 2000 to 2004. If you're looking there, no worries. From 2000 to 2004, NDT, which at that time was the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, became a funding partner on a 50-50 basis from 2004. Now, NDT has given notice that when the current 50-50 partnership expires on 31 March 2016, March next year, they may not be inclined to renew as the tourism incentive program TIP may become operational and SME development may be done in-house by NDT itself. Now, as per, we have basically accepted that that is the situation, that's the decision that NDT has taken. And we are adjusting our business model to take into consideration that come March 2016, we might not have that 50% funding coming from government. But we are waiting to see the details of the NDT incentive program and how our SMEs could access the program to grow their businesses and create the much needed jobs that we are all talking about. Challenges and opportunities. Again, the issue for us is really how do we go about mobilizing more funding. And essentially what this slide speaks to is the contribution that we have historically received from various sources and the impact that it has had on one particular aspect, that is job creation. And you can see that from 2009 to 2010, from a national department of tourism point of view, our funding has basically dwindled to 13.5 million for the next financial year we started in April. And the consequence of that, obviously, is the job that our enterprises have been able to deliver also reflected the dwindling down of the funding, because you can only do so much with the diminishing resources. In conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, members of the portfolio committee, we would like to say that CAP has established a solid reputation as a credible tourism SME development agency. The challenging question of resource mobilization remains a vexing subject, and we like to use capital letters to emphasize the issue. And we are convinced that with more resources, we can definitely do much more. However, the irony has been clear, and it is unfortunate, is that when the tourism incentive program is launched sometime next year, it is not really clear what it envisages for CAP, in spite of the fact that we have 15 years of successful experience in tourism SME development, 10 of which were spent in partnership with NDT. We are in the process of reinventing our business model to identify new opportunities to mobilize funding to support SME development work. We appreciate the support that we have received from NDT. CAP could not have achieved all the figures that we shared with you without NDT. Let us agree with that. As well as the portfolio committee that we have interacted with over the years. It's towards part and parcel of our processes every year to actually come to this chamber to address the members of the portfolio committee and with them in terms of what we have been able to do with the cooperation that we got from NDT. We are looking forward to the future with confidence that we will continue to play a prominent role in tourism SME development in our country. And we will continue to put emphasis on the need for partnership, and any assistance or any guidance or any support that we can get, whether from the public sector or the private sector, it will be assistance that we will be able to mobilize and apply for the greater good of our industry. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we have prepared for you this morning. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. my name is Greg Kramer. I'm from the Center Catalan. My brain is a record of the president of the president of the
I'm sorry, you missed my...
I was just talking about it.
Yeah. It was maybe it was a good time. Honorable member, questions, discussions, answers, honorable co-host.
No, I'm not good. Yeah, thanks, Chair. I have a few questions. I was going to ask how you fund it, but you did explain it further on 50% from the trust and 50% from DOT. I think it was important when I had these non-profit organizations or whatever they might be, the actual vehicle, that have got a mandate to undertake certain things, that we ask what actually are the numbers in terms of what is achieved. So, in your slide about how many jobs you created and how many, how much turnover grew in those particular enterprises, I'm just trying to find it on page. Yeah, that's shown your presentation and in your annual booklet. Let me show your presentation, please. Right.
Is this the one
on the screen? No, well, that's exactly the one, yes. You say you contributed to the generation of over 7 billion rand and supported the creation of over 80,000 jobs. There obviously is going to be definitional and measurement challenge here because contributed means it wasn't solely your effort, a contribution rather than a sole effort. And when you support something, it's not clear. How many of those 80,000 jobs would have been created without your support? So it's a bit murky with respect to know exactly how much turnover you generated and how many jobs you actually created, but for your intervention. I think you did try to explain that by saying you try to measure those two variables by looking at turnover and jobs before and after the particular enterprise joined DATV. Having mentioned those caveats, which may be very substantial, it turns out that it costs about 87,500 rand to create a job, based on what you do in it. You divide 7 billion by 80,000 and get 87,500. Can you check me? That's not. And bearing in mind that 50% of this money came from the Department of Tax Management, I'm interested to actually establish how that compares to other interventions from other government departments to achieve the same objective. You obviously concentrate on the tourism sector through the various aspects that you've identified in the presentation. But for example, EPWP, there's a debate about whether they're real jobs or not, but creates a lot of jobs, if only on a temporary basis, and one can work out from the EPWP budget how much each job costs. So my first question is, can you give us an assessment as to how your particular funding from the Department of Tourism and how many jobs how much each job costs you create, how that compares to other departments. That's my first question. My second question is, I would like to think that we don't simply compare ourselves to other departments in this country, that we have some form of survey, and you mentioned this EP survey which tries to track this. But that rather than simply getting high in the country, you would look at international best practice and you would compare how we are doing in this country to other countries for similar types of initiatives. That's my second question. Does that international benchmarking take place? And if yes, how do we compare to international standards in that regard? Then my second last question is, you mentioned the impact on job creation by our labor law regime. And that you tracked, as you did, via your SBP survey. And I think it would be extremely helpful for us in this committee if you could actually quantify. And if this does really work, what actually these numbers, can you tell us, based on the survey that you did, which would have been a representative sample, what are your role players that you're supporting in the tourism industry telling you in terms of the actual quantum of jobs? Because if you take your average response and take the sample, you can work back from the sample to the general population, and you could tell us in the tourism industry, X amount of jobs are not created every year because of the labour law regime. That is exactly the kind of information this can need, so we can weigh up the benefits of a more flexible and perhaps a more relaxed labour law regime as opposed to the costs of having that. And, you know, people will argue, and that's a legitimate point of view, that maybe we need the other side, but then we have to compare the security of jobs that we do have and the quality of those jobs to the jobs that don't exist at all because of it. I think we need to hear both sides of the story so we can make an informed decision. Then my last question is on your financials. On your income statement, you talk about general revenue and designated revenue. One is, you know, 15 times more than ever. I'd like to know the difference between that. You have finance income of, once you make an operating loss, but then you have finance income of 310,000 rand, and very low finance costs, about 2% of that, at 6,900 rand. So I go back to your balance sheet. I see that you've got cash and cash equivalents of 4.9 million. So it seems to me that most of your cash is earning 6% interest. And that's how you get a 310,000 rand finance income, which is essentially 300,000 rand less finance income. And of your liabilities, trade and other payables of another 6 million, you're not paying interest on it. So I'd just like to confirm what is actually happening. But you seem to have a lot of cash that you stashed away in the bank, 5 million rand. There's an interest on that, and that's actually the reason why the interest fund actually is afloat. And she's living off fixed deposits in effect, or 30-day call, something like that, to generate income. But for that, you're making a big loss. So can you give us some insight into your balance sheet? I mean, for example, what are your trade and other payables? I mean, just creditors? In which case, what are they? Because it seems to me that you're taking money from DET, or DOT, I should say.
Yeah.
Well, the National Department of Tourism, yeah, so Department of Tourism, National Department, the same thing. Department of Tourism, 50%. And you made up, presumably, the other 50% from your business partners. But the description for the numbers doesn't really tell about what's actually happening. So I'd like to know what the general revenue is, what the designated revenue is, why you have so much money in the bank when you should, I believe, be using that money that's been given to you, presumably from the Department of Tourism budget, to support these enterprises. Instead, what you're doing is you're banking it and earning interest income, which basically would be the operation of the black. So that's more of a financial question, but if I can have those answered, I'd be grateful. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not taking away anything from the main purpose of the tourism enterprise partnership, because it's obviously something that we do support. I'm saying that as part of my introduction because I'm going to ask, similar to my colleagues, some serious questions because you have received public funds from the department. I think it's important that this committee plays a very important oversight role to make sure that those funds are allocated and spent accordingly, and specifically with reference to the program that has been decided upon by the NDT to make sure that it aligns with our strategy. Now, in terms of the overview, your mandate is to facilitate the growth, development and sustainability of small tourism businesses. Now, there's been reference made to various partnership programs that have been developed, people that have benefited, etc. Much of the deliberations of this committee up to now has been around the development of rural tourism. And we know that in your major cities there are various initiatives that support tourism, and in many cases it happens. Whether we try and steer it in a different direction, there's a big drive in the major cities as it stands. And therefore this committee, through its deliberations in the last few months, have continuously said that we need to deal with the geographical spread across the country, and that we need to deal with tourism specifically in your rural areas to develop products and market them accordingly. So when you talk about your mandate is to facilitate the growth, development and sustainability of small tourism businesses, is part of your focus also to develop rural tourism operators and service providers, and not only to focus on your major cities, etc., but to really go out and to make sure that you assist those small town operators and service providers throughout the entire country to basically assist them to get the businesses up and running and to get their ventures up and running. Because it's not always a business, but it might be a tourism venture. And I think that's also something I would like to talk about a little bit later on. Then, on the demand and supply side, when you do your training and your mentorship and the provision of funds, is it aligned to our strategies, again, given the fact that you are receiving 50% of your funding from the national department? So are your programs aligned with the projects and programs that we have set out, together with our National Tourism Centre strategy, which is a document which I'm sure that you are well familiar with? So those programs that you are funding and mentoring, etc., I want to be absolutely certain that those projects and programs are aligned with our sector strategy, because that becomes critical. Because that comes to the next issue of duplication, because, you know, there's many programs within the department currently to provide mentorship and training, the Tourism Buddies program, and a whole host of others. So we must make certain that there are no duplication, and obviously we will have duplication from time to time, but when we are providing funds to an entity such as this, we must be absolutely certain that we get bang for buck, and that it is aligned to our strategies, and that you are dealing with a limited geographic sphere, and that you are in fact dealing with a demand and supply, that you are providing funds for the programs that are needed, and not to assist someone just to get their business up and running so that they can generate profits, but that it actually speaks to our core objectives as the Department of Tourism. So it comes to the demand and supply issue. Then on the slide which talks about the impact of the TEP services, which came as a result of your audit or impact assessment conducted by the SVP. Now on that particular slide, training scores high, and that's important because we want to train people in the industry. Marketing and market access support, which is also the second highest, no problem there. But if you go down to mentorship networking, I'm concerned that you're not doing enough to give people the space through your program to network and to provide mentorship. Because if they are being trained with public funds, they have to give something back. Now, the first slide you showed that they are employing 13 people and 27 people, etc., that's good, and we support that. But there needs to be something more out of this where we should deal with the mentorship, because people need to give back if they've been trained through public funds, and also the networking space, because we know that tourism is a creative industry, and it's not always about building things and fixing things, but also about networking, because this is the business creativity part of the tourism industry as a whole. And we know that in many tourism associations, networking plays a key role, and then marketing and product development, etc. So I think that those two, for me, should also score much higher, and that's something that you would need to focus on. There's definitely some room for improvement there. Then I'm going to conclude with the issue of funding, where the imminent termination or suspension of the funds to TEP, and that the department would now deal with it as part of the TIP program. It's a pity that we do not have someone here from the department, because for us as a committee, to fully understand the impact and the role of TIP, I would have liked to compare it with the department's TIP. So I hope in the future, Madam Chair, that there would be a discussion, a very serious discussion between the committee and the NDP about what would the role be of TIP. But if we make sure that there are a continuity and that there's definitely a program to deal with the issues that we are currently dealing with. Obviously, all the issues that we've raised, but that's part of our job. But I do feel that this issue must be addressed so that we fully understand what the TIP program would entail to make sure that it deals with all the issues that are currently being dealt with by TEP. So I don't know, Madam Chair, if you know perhaps if we will receive a presentation in future from the department on the TIP, because that's a serious issue. There's going to be a termination of their role very soon. What's going to be in the place And is it something that this committee has had the privilege or at least will be exposed to that so that we know exactly what we can expect from charity? Thank you.
Sorry, to quickly respond to the TRP issue. On the 13th of March, we'll be having a presentation on TRP. I'm sure that will also help there.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you to the presenter with the presentation. Chair, mine won't be different from the other questions that have been asked by other honorable members, but I will be going my own way. I want to ask first, now that they are coming with this good story that is on slide 1, which talks about job creation, that will committed this tourism industry as a job driver, since we have a challenge of lack of jobs as a country. Now that they are coming with this good story that I see here, but they are short of telling us where these establishments are. As we see them, it's good, they are employing so many, but we do not know where they are. We want to be sure that you are covering the 9 provinces of the country. We want to be sure of that. My other question would be around the issue of clustering provinces. Because I understand that most of these tourism activities are mostly on the coastal provinces and in the inland. But when you cluster Eastern Cape with Gauteng and Northwest, it becomes difficult for me to understand. My other question would be, in those provinces where you operate, do you have fully fledged offices or you just coordinate? How do you work there? More so in the provinces where you have clustered the provinces. The other question would be around the issue of membership. Is there a reason that you can put a front for you to use the flat rate? Because you have small, medium, micro. The flat rate goes a micro, it means a macro. It means you operate on a bigger or larger scale. There are those who have difficulty in entering the industry. There are those who are already there. Is there a reason or was that an amount that you have put forward, the 450? My other question would be around your being a member of your organization. You can access funding. What role do you play as an organization? Can you act as surety for that establishment, for that individual? Or what assistance do you have as an organization for that person to access funding? On the issue of mentoring and training, what else is there for that establishment? Do you make a follow-up for those establishments that you have to get funding? Where are they? Because there are also competitions like Lizela Awards. Do they win those awards? In a way, I heard that you are in a way trying to transform the industry. Why are the Lilizela, Lily White at the end? Where are those other people that you have associated so that they in a competition, they are able to showcase what they are doing in those establishments? And also there are those establishments that are assisted by your organization in to get grading funds so that do they remain graded or you assist them, they register for grading and after that they use that status of being graded. On the issue of learnership, there is the youth, they are unemployed. They are there in those learnership. You make a follow-up after they have completed the learnership, such that they are placed in some establishment. I think, then if there is another question, I will come up again. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the presenters. I really enjoy your presentation. I want to start at the conclusion. You are saying that in spite of the fact that TED has a record of 50 years of successful experience in tourism, it has SMME development, your relationship will must be terminated by the National Department of Tourism. Now, why do you think they want to terminate it? Have you engaged with them on this matter? You say you are in the process of reinventing your business. What exactly are you doing? Why are you doing it? Have you some, what do you call it? Why are you doing it? And have you engaged with our new Department of Small Enterprises? That's a good question. Mr. Jefferson, I left my space this morning with me. It's unfortunate that you didn't number your slides, because it would be much easier to refer you to that. You have established an access to information through the recruiter of tourism. Now, when do you establish it? And why is your grasp on networking so low? What have you done correctly? And it's in comparison, as the Honourable forces, one can understand why how training has established 40% while networking is only less than 5% or 5%. What do you do to increase it? Then, on a page of comparative assessment, you say it is founded that regulatory environment is quite the challenges that a business is having with regard to regulatory environment. You are doing training. In your training, a citizen, TP should address regulatory environment. And when an enterprise is entering this business, they should know the other basis. They shouldn't give it as a touch, in my view. You've explained why there is a high staff turnover and the seasonal nature of the work. Mr. Jefferson? The page of skills development on learnership. They mentioned that there are 253 learnership implemented by Katita. 156 have maintained the pace as at year end. That is 59%. That's hopefully too low. Money is invested here. What have they done with the outfall of 41%? Have they tried to contact this outfall of trainees? Because it's a waste of money. Taxpayers' money. Then on slide of business registration and DNA, I would like to know, as one of the other honorable members already said, the spread of the businesses, especially the rural ones. We are interested in rural tourism. In Chairperson, the last one. On the pie chart that we got on the demographic segmentation, rural enterprises, you say, is 58%. Think it should be improved. Then you say this owned enterprise is only 13%. What are you doing to enhance youth owned enterprises? And with it, my basic question, how many of these enterprises are done by people with disabilities. And then, Chairperson, is there an exit market or exit study, exit thing for these micro and small enterprises to become medium in the medium market? Then somewhere you are saying that the SMEs are leading to this established market. What are the impacts? I understand the approach differently. I don't know where exactly it is. But they are incorporated by established businesses. Notable achievement. The first bullet. Enterprise Supplier Development Program. The end of the sentence is facilitating the integration of SMME into large corporate value chains. That's the impact for the SMME. Then your impact inception in 2000, your bullet, the second last bullet. You say you are mentoring over for the 15 years. Over 450 small tourism companies. If you divide it by 15, why did you use your partner to also move? And then you can cut your cost as the easy. Thank you,
gentlemen. Thank you, Chair. I believe tourism and NTEP has a vital role to play in the development of South African economy. Much has been said already. I also just want to touch on the financial side. I had a look last night quick on the TV's financial statement. I didn't receive anything that is said from our researchers. Their core role should be to send us members. I'm sure they do send other members. Maybe they haven't got my email address on information on any presentation. I think I don't know if I'll make sure that I do have my email address. On the income side, on income, NDT, I think it's about 25 million. In micro enterprises, the support fund also gives you about 16 million rand. That gives you a cap income of about 41 million rand, isn't it? Also, your director, just being a non-profitable organization, the directors are there on a voluntary basis. They don't really get paid. So you do have these key members. How many does that consist of? You don't even really have to tell me now. How many members does that consist of? Because I thought they get the salary for the key members as something like 4.6 million rand. Then there's also bonuses. If I just counted on this year, the national team, and I hope that's not it, so that's tremendous salary, and these people are really extremely well remunerated. With the bonuses also of 1.6 million rand or something in the area. And then the total cost of TEP. I also saw on the financial side that the employment cost is over 10 million rand. Then I want to ask you, as part of the directors, including the chairperson, Mr. Rick Manuel, the first chairman, resigned in 2012. Why was that in that year, including him? Five. I think it was four. Four members, including him, that arrived during 2012. Also, I think it was mentioned that cash at the end of the term was over 4 million rand to investment on that. That was touched on by a previous member. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. The benefit of having asked is everybody else has asked the question. I just wanted to emphasize two things. The one is that list of projects of SMEs and the enterprises themselves, because we can do the on-the-ground oversight and actually engage with entrepreneurs who are in the industry and get their viewpoint on what the challenges are and where they see opportunities. And the other is with reference to your demographic slide on youth and its representation. That was also covered. My question is, what efforts do you take to specifically target if you do? I don't know if people are just interested to come to you or if there's an active marketing campaign for specific demographics, because youth unemployment, I think, is a massive opportunity for us to make a dent in youth unemployment through the tourism sector if all coordinated properly. So I'd just like to know what your coordinating role is in trying to specifically target that segment, because it's not, I think there's more potential for growth there. Thank you.
Thank you very much for all the questions. The advantage of starting very last. In your establishment of SMEs and SMMEs, small business, do you have cooperatives as well? Because that's the buzzword that we have lately. From 2010, cooperatives were quite an issue. I was impressed by what Honorable Kronborg said around international benchmarking. Surely, South Africa is not the only country where there is an organization which is responsible for development of small businesses. In countries like South Africa, are there organizations like yourself that do more or less the same work? And what have you learned out of it to empower and enrich the way you do your work? I think we'll have the response, but because of time constraints, I'm told your flight is at 1 o'clock. I'm sure if you leave here around 11:15, you will have covered those questions. Mr. Manuelson came late because there was an accident in Andrew, hence the plane. But here's our last day.
Let's start with the first question. The 87,000 per job, if you were basically to take the 7 billion and divide that by the 80,000 that we talked about. When it comes to putting a cost to job creation, it really depends on the industry that you are in. If you are in manufacturing, the cost will be different. The cost per job will be different. If you are in the service industry that you are in, the cost will be much lower than if you are comparing it to the manufacturing industry, for instance. There's a benchmark that we can use for comparative purposes, and that is the job fund. If you look at the product that the jobs fund has basically approved, in terms of the services, the enterprises that are in the services sector and the jobs that are promising to create, it is around 23,000 jobs, 23,000 rand per job. So that is not very close to the 87,000 that we are talking about here, but it really depends on the industry. I also do believe that we need to take into consideration that inflation does play a role. These figures are coming back from the year 2000. We're talking about 15-year figures. We will need to take the effect of inflation on that. But the point essentially is that take 87,000 per job created and after sales, does it make sense? Is it right? In our guesstimate, if we can actually get 87,000 rand invested to create one job, perhaps it is an efficient way of looking at it. But in view that there isn't a specific benchmark that we can look at, and perhaps our next bit at TED is to go out there and do these international studies that you're talking about and see in other countries like Brazil, like India, like other BRICS countries who have gone down this road, for instance, what is the cost per job in terms of enterprise support. So we will definitely do that kind of work and then come back to the portfolio committee on that. The next question is the financial management of TEP. What you are seeing there in terms of the financials and the interest generated from our small enterprise support fund, MESF. MESF is actually the small company or the fund that was established to receive the legacy funding from Business Trust. They closed down in 2011. They transferred an amount to TEP, and that amount is actually the seed capital that TEP was to use for its next bit. When the Business Trust was around, funding was basically Business Trust and NDT. Now, when NDT decided that they were going to close down after being around for 10 years or more, they needed to find a way of transferring those funds to the TED on the basis of a mandate that allows them to do so. So we registered the MESF as a PDO, a target benefit organization. And because that was the organization that was funding the 15% of debt operations, we could not really use that money in terms of long-term investment. We could only use it in such a way that should we need it for within the next 3 months or next 6 months, we have access to it. So an investment policy was put to the board and they agreed to it, and this is why we are investing in those low-yielding kind of instruments. I just want to deal with all the finance questions and get them out of the way before we move to the others. Our financial financial statements in terms of income and income generation. I think the slide that I have on the board. Let's just look at that and use it as a way of comparing. And guide the discussion forward. If you look at NDT, the National Department of Tourism, and let's just focus on the more recent years, for instance, their contribution of 25 million for the last 3 years is essentially that 50% that public sector is providing. Now, the way we make our 50% is not always in cash, for instance. It could be in kind contribution. Lisa mentioned the PUM program that we organized with people from the Netherlands, for instance. These are people who are sent by the Netherlands government as part of their overseas operation. And when they come here, the only thing that we provide is accommodation and certain and the like. But for us, that is contributing to paying for the mentorship that we wanted to run. So in a way, part and parcel of the partnership that we mobilize, could, whether it's in kind or in cash, would basically be utilized to deliver on targets that are in our business plan. So it it becomes a cost-saving opportunity for us. That's why you would, perhaps you would think that the cash that is accumulating, it is cash that is accumulating simply because we have been very creative in finding a way of acquiring that service that we normally would have paid for if we didn't have someone to provide it to them. And that's just really how we have been able to survive all these years. When I talk about legacy funding, let's be very, very open, and we can only be open with a body like yours. The legacy funding that we got from a business trust was about 34 million. That's it. So, because 34 million, the 34 million that we needed to find a way of stretching and working with NDT to make sure that we provide the targets that we have been talking about. And the way we make up for our time is through these partnerships. And we call ourselves TDT. We basically recognize that the T is not for nothing. It means partnership. It means that working with people, let me see if I can find that slide, for instance. A great example. People is the Swiss International Organization to promote international trade. Every year, people pay for about 2 hours of our members to go to Zurich to participate in a trade show. We pay 10% of that participation. The rest is paid by this international corporation. If we didn't have their corporation, their participation, and we decided that we went just to go to Zurich, we would have had to pay for that. Where is that going to come from? It was going to come from either our MBSF funding or from another organization that would be able to support that. At any rate, on the NDT side, NDT funding always comes with its own target. It's not for us to say, here's the money, go play. No, and I'm very glad that the NDT people are here. That 25 million per annum provided by the NDT is linked to specific targets in specific programs, and it is always aligned to the national tourism sector strategy. So indeed, our partnership supports the objectives of the NTSF, and in fact, that's the only way we could have access to that funding. It is always against a specific program that we put together, which we negotiate before the beginning of the financial year. And when they're happy with what we are going to do with the concise their allocation, they're going to be signed on the contract. Tabo can provide more input in terms of that. In terms of duplication, whether the sector is doing duplicating some of the initiatives within NDT, let's just put it that way. Like I said, our funding is always being sent to specific targets. That is to be true. That is to be with NDT. And sometimes NDT will come to us and say, can you do this for us, or can you look into this? And we would basically respond that you might not be able to do it this financial year, simply the funding that you have given us is dedicated to delivering so many jobs from rural enterprises, so many jobs from urban enterprises, so many mentorships, and so on and so forth. So from that perspective, ladies and gentlemen, the public funding that we use is public funding that is targeted to specific programs that we deliver on behalf of NDC, the Department of Culture, or the strategic plan. So the demand and supply issue, whether we change willy-nilly or whether there's a with what we do. Again, the fact that we deliver targeted programs to NDC answers that question. They are the ones who tell us what they want us to do with the funding. Sometimes it is a question of negotiating and advertising how the money will be better applied this program. But always, there's only programs that are in there is a budget and the government plan to apply the funding. The issue of mentorship and networking, and why is that low? We have explained that mentorship is a very expensive program to run. Mentorship is actually reserved to companies that have achieved a certain level of growth, because they are the ones that are most likely to benefit from that mentorship. In terms of the sample study, the 130 establishments that were selected to be part of a 3-year study, not all of them actually went through membership. Therefore, they could not make a judgment on that. But if you compare the sample size and the small number of people who have participated in mentorship program, it will give you low numbers. And we did discuss this matter with the researcher, and it was a matter of actually you should have weighted that finding and compare the ones who found our mentorship successful to the ones who have actually experienced our workshop. The way it is right now, it is just the ones who benefited from mentorship compared to the whole size of the 130. This is something that we have picked up, right? It's a methodological issue that we need to address. And we do agree with members of the committee. Mentorship and networking from a business point of view are actually the most impactful support that you can provide. However, also know that if you have 25 million from one partner and you are making you're trying to make up the other 25 million using funding from here, funding from there, it will be a question of making choices. Are you going to just focus on mentorship and have maybe 100 people talk? Or are you going to say, no, we are actually going to have 920 enterprises? It really is a question of strategic choice, but the choice is also sometimes dictated by the partner. If NDC says we want you to focus on this and that, and that's what we're giving you our money, that's what we're going to do. Hence, some of these things that you see in the actual numbers. Ladies and gentlemen, do not believe that there's a duplication in terms of what we do compared to what NDC does. But what's also strong is that some of their programs, we do have experience and expertise to run them on their behalf. And a good example is basically some of the because these are enterprises, and we do have the to have those.
Just in terms of the question about the clustering of provinces, they're not clustered in terms of putting provinces together. They're clustered in terms of having one service provider, but we have a physical office in each of the provinces. So we have an office in Eastern Cape, we have one in Gauteng, and we have one in North West. Same as Mpumalanga and Limpopo. There was a question about the membership, whether it's a flat rate. No, it's not a flat rate. The actual membership fee is 600 rand. It's then discounted by 10% if you're rural, 10% if you're a woman, 10% if you're youth, and you eventually get to the 450 or more or less, depending on that. Do we do follow-ups on mentorship? Yes, we do. We've got a graduation model where once there is mentorship, we then put them in market access. We, together with South African Tourism, partners such as SIVO, we do the seed recruitment event. so they graduate from the Institute of Market Access and the ARCAS program. We don't have it with us at the moment, but we can have a breakdown of jobs for problems. We have that information available as well as the list. We chatted about doing the list, but we weren't sure whether we should bring a list of 4,000 enterprises, but we'll make that available to the secretary.
Yeah. Can I just add something to that question of where are the jobs? You heard that we actually delivered targeted programs to NDP. Now, there is a monitoring and evaluation process that the department talks about the process, and every month we submit an essence sheet to the NDP. And that essence sheet tracks the target that we have identified that we would achieve. So, in terms of jobs, we will indicate to them which attachment has created those jobs. And they do have their own internal process of verifying which we submit. We audit those figures before we submit them to the entity, but the entity also picks up a phone and looks at the list and do spot check. Okay, so and so, we have a report here from CBC saying that you participated in the training program on this day, on that day. Is that true? Again, what we do can be verified, and that evidence report is actually what we use for accountability purposes. In such a way, it's everything that we invested in that, whether it's from the public sector or from the private sector, is accounted for. You also ask how do we work in the property. Like Lisa has explained, the cluster that you saw was not really cluster per se. These are offices that work that are situated in each of those provinces. So you heard about annual targets that entity sets for their funding. Now, as a head office, basically indicates to each province how many enterprises they needed to support in the specific targets that have been identified. So if a good example is this year, not this year, but the year starting in April, 2016, NDP has given us 13.4 million. That's the contribution that they are making for the next year. And they want the entire 14.5 million to be devoted to rural enterprises. And that's essentially the agreement going forward. So then we sit back and say, okay, we have a database of 4,000, almost 3,000 enterprises, 4,100. And NDC is saying, we want you to support 100 rural enterprises in this area, that area, or that area. We sit down, we negotiate how, whether these targets are the ones that they will be happy with, and we agree, and we sign. And every month we submit to them evidence that we have done the things that we would do. And that's just how, from an accountability point of view, that's how we have been able to manage the relationship so far. Mentorship training, do you help them achieve awards? Yes, we do. Like I've indicated, the IKEA Award used to be run in partnership with TEC, in the sense that we will help African tourism advertise within our database in terms of the criteria for participation. They will shortlist, we will help them shortlist the candidates, and we will prepare them for the award in terms of none other than the mentorship program that helps them to really acquire skills that they will need, not only to shine in the process, but also to make sure that once you are an IKEA award winner, that you are, that you are part of that 3% perhaps that they're talking about. Now, one of the criticisms, and this is not perhaps a criticism of tech or South African tourism, but perhaps a criticism to the project. We all know how ITEA is set up to run. ITEA is based on ITEA and Vela now, but we used to be responsible for the ITEA component of the Vela. That's why I'm emphasizing on ITEA. You can really look at it from many different angles. But if it's based on the criteria and people are meeting or not meeting the criteria, let's perhaps better left to the judging panel to determine. But what I can say is that I'm very proud of having judged ITEA from 2000 up until 2007. We have had excellent attendees of all sorts that have actually won that excellent award. Bern, as Bernard mentioned, as example, is actually the first ever ITEA winner back in 2001, I believe. And if you track his progress, look where he is now. He has definitely arrived. And the process has worked for him. I can think of two others. The current gentleman who is the chairperson of the Northern Cape Tourism Board. I just can't remember his name. The amazing man you would remember. He was the second tourism service he had with us. His business is doing very well. Sheila owns the Vickers House in Tenerife. He was an ITEA. Sheila Machiku is the owner of the Vickers House in Tenerife. She used to have another one in Centuria. She's doing very well. She's a member of the board of Tatita until the board was disbanded recently. So there are pockets of excellence. Perhaps what we would love to see from the test control is how do we accelerate that particular point. But we will always take that to our own transition. That is resources. We really do not have enough resources to achieve our own ambition. It is as simple as that. And we have convinced that we have experience of 50 years, while perhaps not full class, it has taken us this far. What is the next step? And that brings me to when I mentioned that we are reinventing our business model. We are trying to play a stage. Should indeed, with the advent of TIP, that there's no opportunity for a partnership with the NDD, a ring-fenced partnership which says you shall deliver the services and that, then if we still want to go around and we do believe that we have a role to play, then we must do what all other businesses do. Look for opportunity for yourself. And we saw opportunity in the newly amended code, which are going to come into play for next. Enterprise and Bataille Development element is going to account for 40 points of the scorecard. And I can tell you, as we sit here, since we relaunched that program to take into consideration the new element, people are calling us to basically come and talk to them about our program, and they want to see if out of the 4,000 or so enterprises that we have, are they enterprises that they can select and support with the ED funding. And once that support takes place, the integration into the value chain comes. And a good example is the Rennies partnership that we have. What Rennies has done, because they have a national footprint and they service all sorts of corporate clients, we signed a partnership with them that has been going on for the last 4 years. And they're saying that we can select guest houses in areas where we know we send business. And we won't cover those guest houses with customer service, with the marketing and so on and so forth. We want you to do that for us. And the way we create market access for these guest houses is that if translate officials are trying to understand. We, as ladies, we manage translate travel. We will put them into those guest houses that we have provided funding to go. And that's how the partnership works. So when we talk about, on the first slide, that we work with them and we help them to integrate the corporate value chain, that's really what we're talking about. And we have a live example of that through our partnership with Jenny. But more can be done. That's really what we're talking about. In terms of the CAP system learners, the 263 of whom come right, we say that 159 have kept the pace. The graduation process through CAP CETA takes a while. So we are saying that currently, out of the original 263, the 159 have basically done everything that needs to be done from the requirements of the learnership. Now, it would be disingenuous for us to sit there and tell you that all 263 will get it. Because simply that's not how it works. There is a learning program just like any other. You have to do your homework, you have to do the assignments, you have to do exams, and so on and so forth. In doing so, some would succeed and meet the requirements of the program, but without doubt, some will fail. And we have had conversations with CAPSITA because of where we stand today at 59% of the cohort, focusing the pace. How is CAP doing compared to other organizations that have run similar programs? And it's about the ballpark. We are not very far.
One of the challenges, interestingly enough, was the fact that we did not employ learners, there was unemployed learners. One of the major challenges was that the actual employer often wouldn't release the learner to go and train, 3 days of training. And that was one of the major challenges, where we actually had to put incentives in place. We would pay the employer about $1,000 and say the learner go on training. They paid the tax incentives as well. A lot of the learners had not studied post the trip. They hadn't studied in many years. And it was quite a difficult program for them to complete. It was a year, plus their portfolio of evidence. And for some people who hadn't studied in many years while working, it was quite a challenge for them as well. So those were two major challenges that we faced, was the employer not wanting to let the learner go and undertake the training. And then the volume of work for a learner who hadn't studied in a number of years.
Okay. Going through the notes as well, the question of grading places, whether we help them to make a space with what grade. We do help them to grade, but the decision to remain in the program or drop out of the program is entirely up to the establishment. What we do essentially is that when they apply to us, and they say that they're going to use our GDF funding for grading, we can't decide for them where they want to apply. But whether they will take graded is entirely up to them. If they want to take graded and they want us to support them again, we'll do so. That means we do put a cap of about 2 years, a collective year, in terms of with their grading. We heard about the 450. There was something I really wanted to add. Lisa has given a great explanation. But the reason why we have that rate of 600 that comes down to about 450, that services have always been for free up until 2 years ago when we instituted this 450. The reason why we instituted the 600 was to actually really make sure that our SMEs are accountable to themselves for their own development as well. Because if you see that we would organize workshops and people would not show up, we will, just to give an example, we'll do everything on the basis of 100 trainees, 100 enterprises coming to the workshop. workshop. And 1 month before, we will contact them. Are you coming to the workshop? We will all confirm that they're still coming. A week prior to the workshop, we will still ask them, are you still coming? All of them will say, yeah, no problem, we'll be coming. On the actual day, we'll be happy to present 50% of the 100. And yet, as tech, we have done everything on basis of 100 delegates. The room has been booked on that basis, the facilitator has been booked, catering has been arranged, and so on and so forth. When we came into the organization, one of the things that we said, look, we really must try and do something like this. So we decided that what would happen if we were to ask enterprises to pay an admin fee. And the admin fee is really what we are calling their skin in the game. So it's they don't abuse our resources. So that we don't waste paying for things that we have not consumed on the basis of our enterprises not doing what they were supposed to do. So we said, we did our own research and found out what membership fees in the sector applications are. And this application cost range from 1,300 to be a Chamber of Commerce member, all the way to maybe 45,000 to be a certain member if you are of a certain standing as a corporate. We place our symbolically to tell them that they should pay that amount to become a member to have access to the value up to 40,000 rand if we go on to our membership for foreigners. So it is really a way of making sure that our resources are not abused, that we recruit in the program people who are serious about their own growth, who will not make you look such a high facilitator or such an important workshop on for them not to not show up. What you're thinking is that's what you have in fact. So it is a way of protecting everyone indeed. Learnership follow-up and placement that Lisa has explained, these are employed learners already. These are not people who are looking for jobs. Let me talk a little bit about youth enterprises and youth employment. I came into CDC in the beginning of January 2011. One of the first things I did was to actually talk to the National Youth Development Agency to see if we can come up with a partnership whereby we will create awareness of the opportunities in the tourism sector among the youth, and if they are sufficiently interested and they want to consider tourism as a track for themselves, we can come up with a program to work with them. This was July, August 2011. We exchanged proposals. We're going to do a pilot starting in Malaga. We have given them a full proposal with costing, with the implementation plan, and so on and so forth. When it came to now contributing to the funding, we were willing to contribute our 30%. They were going to contribute 30%, and we were going to find a corporate that could bring the other. To cut a long story short, the person we're dealing with, the executive that we're dealing with, left the organization. And the person who came, who replaced him, was not interested because they didn't understand what it is we were trying to achieve, and the priority became something else. And how our attempt at working with the organizations dedicated to youth issues and youth employment fell through. Obviously, in the current environment, everyone is talking about youth unemployment and so on and so forth. We do believe that we have expertise and knowledge to set up programs dedicated to the youth. And the issue with youth is that we mustn't focus on the youth who already have their enterprises. One can help those, but it's also an opportunity to work with the unemployed youth opportunities that with a little bit of creativity and guidance, they will find their niche. For me, if I were a passive necessity with funding to a high degree kind of thing, that's how I would do it. I would team up with an organization that would facilitate these kind of things. And if 100 of you are exposed to business opportunities in a specific sector, and if only 5 of them end up creating their own enterprises and end up hiring 10 each, out of nothing, we have 10 jobs created already. So that's my comment on your question about I do believe that we need to do something about the
The outstanding question is, please can send them in writing to the secretary of the committee. Charles, do you have a word?
Yes, ma'am. Honourable Chair and indeed Honourable Members here, I just want to say that the department really, overall the period that we've been in partnership with CD, really we've been supporting and strengthening the good work that CD has been doing all this time. However, as you can see from the outer years going forward, you see that the budget cut, you know, we know basically the national heritage of the country, where money is being, you know, required, you know, to improve on infrastructure and so on. That, in a way, has affected a number of, in fact, all the national departments have been subjected to budget cuts. But we told ourselves that with a little allocation that we'll be receiving from Treasury, as you can see, 7.5, we'll carry on supporting TEP or the partnership we have with TEP. And we should be having a very focused approach in our research because we're working with minimal funds this time. That's why we took a conscious decision as a department to say the focus on enterprises in rural areas, you know, because we have to do something there. You know, there's a whole lot of development needs that are required there to get the rural enterprises to be functioning as competitive businesses. So our approach going forward will be focusing on rural enterprises. Alongside the next financial year, 2015-2016, we started a research. It's a study, basically, that looks at the various needs, development needs of enterprises and the kind of support that we can all pledge, you know, as the various entities of government. If you look at basically, there's now the new ministry on small businesses as well. We want to see also how we can join forces with the different arms and departments of the same government and provinces as well. What we've gathered is, well, some of the provinces have got already programs that are running to support SMEs. We want to get to a point where we can augment the little funds we have at the different arms of government, including the local government structures as well, to maximize the support that we provide to emerging SMEs. And we have to have a very focused a focus basically on those needy ones, especially in the rural countryside, because if you look at outcomes now, or in fact outcome 7 of the national imperative, we see that it talks about rural development, and that is where we need to be focusing. Again, rural development, yes, it has many layers to it. We went to sleep, for instance, with the Department of Rural Development and Landform that is guiding us in terms of the identified rural loads where they have been declared by presidency as loads on war on poverty. So it's not about reinventing anything, but rather joining forces and also to use resources efficiently and effectively as well to address the challenges that we've identified. The question of duplication, I think my colleagues have covered that, but to say that all the efforts that we have put behind TEP and the partnerships that we have with TEP, it's about addressing these national imperatives. Some of the things government cannot do alone. We need to forge partnerships with entities like TEP and others as well, so that we are able to maximize impact basically on the ground. The study that I mentioned earlier on, it was in a way provide recommendations on how we can best optimize support of the SMEs. We don't know whether we should be, yeah, as part of the outcomes of the study, we'll be having a multi-faceted approach to SME support and development instead of using TEP as the only vehicle. There's TIP as well. So this study, you know, is going to help us to really optimize, you know, what we can offer to enterprise development in the country. So that's as far as I can recommend at this point in time, because all these processes are running concurrently, and we're hoping that in this the end of this quarter, we'll be getting preliminary outcomes of the research that will give us direction on where we need to be heading as a department in terms of the resources that we have, but also liaising with other departments of small businesses and so on. There are other people who are keen to come in so that we don't duplicate the principle of duplication of resources. We work in silos and so on. We get to a local municipality, but this research must help us to bring everything together. So say, let's prioritize the country and set time frame on deliverables. We'll prioritize anything in the immediate term, medium and long term, and do things very well. So that's where we had the Infrastructure Minister, he once said with us to say that we need to prioritize. So the study must help us ready to get to a point where we list the priorities and have time frame attached to those priorities, what will be delivered, when, you know, and in which round. The bias lies on rural areas, so that is the approach that we take. Thank you, ma'am.
We as a committee, we thank you very much. We'll be expecting responses via email on whatever has not been responded to. And we thank you very much. We would like to excuse you and thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much for your time, and thanks for your time, everyone, and thanks for the support. We appreciate it. Thank you.
For meetings Africa, I had just made an error of the IP entrust meeting aspect, for which I am really very sorry. By also Mrs. Africa, we were to say what Africa had brought to the country. That was on Monday night. And on Tuesday, we had a meeting. Wednesday, we had a meeting because it ended on Wednesday. And when the form was being signed to the chapter, I noticed that it's got anything to do with policy. And the response, the answer was no. So I felt in absence of everyone that it would be fair just to go for Monday, only come back on Tuesday. But on the other side of the coin, we've got a conference on local government, which I would really request all the members of the committee to attend unless somebody has got something dire and cannot, because that's why you've got to attend. Tourism happens where we live. Tourism is done at local government, and tourism goes inside in the very local government. So if we all could be able to attend God permitting, it would be a plus for the committee. So that we begin to understand why are things not going right and why are people doing things in different directions instead of being focused on tourism. We are all aware that tourism is not a big issue at local government. As much as that the grant for tourism is used to face that by side, but we'll hear about that when we're at the conference. So that's the first thing I just wanted to make some comments on and request for the apology from the committee. I thank you. Now we look at the minutes. Page 1 of the minutes. Anything to say about it? The presentation that was given to us at the hotel by the professor and the content advisor. You have an open then? Go ahead. No. The limit of the 20 years of Feb. So we're in it. The 20 years of Feb. Yeah. I don't know, come up to your hair. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we just go through those. Yeah. Is there anything that needs to be corrected in page 1? Presentation by the reflection. Go. Go in. Go. Can we go to the next page? The next page are recommendations for Parliament. Surely, it can't be recommendations for Parliament when we are doing this work. It's a recommendation for the committee. Recommendations for the committee, not for Parliament. Go. Go in. Go on. Can we go to the next page? Is this one decision on
decision?
The committee deliberated on the presentation and agreed that with the rest of the. Are we ready with the deliberations of the committee? The draft that...
Page 4.
Yes.
page 4, so it's 6th bullet under decisions.
Yes.
Operation Pakisa. Need to find a way to make tourism a prominent feature of this program. I know the President in his State of the Nation address mentioned that Operation Pakisa is about trade and tourism, opening your economy for trade and tourism. But in the items listed under this particular bullet, facilitating issuing of licensing for ocean tourism activities, shark diving, beach resorts development, etc. There's one missing, and that's cruise tourism. We specifically are the cruise tourism included under the operation of Kipa, so that cruise tourism can be developed with us, obviously, the much needed infrastructure to accommodate the cruise liners into the ports of Durban, PE, and Cape Town.
Thank you. Could you say that? Trust and report. Trust and committee progress. So it's also addressing the GIP.
Yes.
That the presentation was made on that day.
About TIP, given the fact that it will eventually replace TEP before seeing more.
TEP is just going to continue until March 2015, until the end of the 2015 financial year. So, it is still there.
Now, I do understand, it's just, whilst we're not attending the launch, because obviously they're sitting that day, and it's a normal parliamentary program to be in effect. I was still hoping to get more an understanding of what the tourism incentive program is all about, especially because this briefing that we have received today talks about the almost coming to an end of their business, and that TIP would take over that role. I think there should have been perhaps more consultation with the committee. I think that we should have been briefed more earlier on in the process, given the fact that there's now this launch happening. But in any case, that's just my view on that.
Yeah, but I think the way it is, it's still all right. Because the department has discussed about it as a department. They've been running it as a department. But they've been coming to tell us, and that is the time when we're asking exactly, is TEP going through the window? And some explanation really. So we cannot buy them, but at least for them to explain to us. And why I replaced with TIP, because TIP has been on their agenda for quite some time, even before we came into this parliament. But it's not been clear what it is all about. Maybe they've said as a department and resource. And resource about it. And maybe there will be some negotiations with TEP as well. Maybe some problems with some problems will be had by TEP. We don't know. But all depends with the knowing what they have intended to do. Then we monitor if they will be doing what they are intending to do. And the last page.
Mm-hmm.
Hawk has agreed to it. You Stefan will be
I can't propose it, but
he's agreed. You are supposed to be adopted?
Yeah. As a correction of Pakistan, I'm not Adam, I'm Adam.
With an S. Thank you.
Okay.
Is there any name better than Rotten as well? Thank you. And so people want to go by 12?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. This is one. This is one. Can you quickly go over it? We all have read it. Okay. Page 1. Any correction of page 1?
That's not actually. I think maybe if there are any issues from the stack, if we could write in the middle of the page by page.
Okay. Write the page. Where there is a little honorable book.
On paragraph 17, the last page.
Yeah.
10.11, it recommended that the Minister of Tourism reduce the decision of stopping funding TEP in 2016 until the department has established full internal capacity to provide tourism SME development programs. Those are the recommendations that, that the committee came up with during our oversight. Now that's the point I'm making.
That's our recommendation.
That's our recommendation.
Yes, and it stands.
And it stands, okay. I just want to be absolutely certain because I still feel that as a committee we should be fully briefed on the rationale behind this decision. Because today it became public knowledge from the size presented to us and from our briefing documents that there are plans afoot by the department to terminate the funding to TEP. And in fact, there was a journalist who specifically made reference, who was yesterday about that. I saw the journalist there. That's right. So we must be very clear on this issue because our daily, I think that the department will come to the committee, brief us fully on this matter because we were actually left quite high and dry on that particular issue because there's no room for interrogation and no room for a deliberation on that particular matter because we know that there are some issues raised today with regards to the workings of TEP, there's room for improvement, there were some issues raised. That's the dialogue that we should have with our partners.
And we did it.
And we did it today very well, but there's for me almost a vacuum. Something was left unanswered on that last bullet. And I know that the department will come on the 13th and explain to us the operations of TIP, but almost preempting that the particular bullet that said that there are plans of football that it's evidence that that should make it complete because the TIP will be launched, the TIP will be introduced, and here our recommendation is that we are actually asking the department to just wait until you have come to brief the committee on your internal capacity, whether you are in a position to deal with capacity building, training, etc., etc. So I feel there is an issue that, for me, I feel almost left more confused, not confused, but Nafi was a nice word, a colleague. So that's the issue. That's for me, because this is in such an important part of the work that the department should be doing. Together with these partners, and I feel there's the issue that, that needs further deliberation because now it's almost done and dusted. As it stands.
Hold your horses. When the development comes, best opportunity. And if we strongly feel these people have done a good job on projects that we have not seen actually, because there's the other side. We haven't seen the projects they're talking about. They're telling us. But if there was at least one project per province that the people who were here in the first parliament did see, then we would have a good point to argue on. They are telling us what they've done. And the department is going to tell us what it is going to do. So that's the time when and if we want TEP to continue, we can lobby for them. But subject to what we see when we go out to the provinces to see these places, what surprised me is because Jerry, I asked them specifically to tell them to bring the list regardless how long that list is, of where these projects are talked about are in the provinces. What? And anyway, even if it's on the other side of the mountain, we want to know about that project. But they said they'll only send it to us, which indicates probably they haven't prepared it. But I never received it, not going to talk on it. But if anything is a project that you see, then we can vouch that no. The department has got its own problems as well, but we'll wait and see how they manage the TIP. Or if they'll continue with TIP and FRI and whatever. But we'll wait and see. We're still here for the 4 years. Thank you very much. Go well. If there's nothing else to say, go well, enjoy your weekend, and come back next week for a happy week.
They universally adopted and agreed to.
I didn't adopt it. Yeah, I don't know.